So announcements for today. On Tiny Box Challenge, you have PCB layouts due on Friday, and then no other homework this week. I do want to mention, after looking through the design comparison reports, that as far as selecting your pathway forward from here in the course, I will reward ambition over functionality as long as that ambition is justified. What I mean to say there is I would prefer you try to build a dual active bridge and perhaps have some issues and don't get everything working or don't quite meet the specifications you hope for, to building a CCM buck converter and getting everything working and have pretty poor performance. Okay. So if you haven't made that selection already, working together with your group and finalizing your decision on what you're going to build, the purpose of this exercise is to allow you guys to get some hands-on experience with designs that you perhaps hadn't worked with before or considered previously. I saw a number of individual reports leaning towards just building a low frequency hard switch buck. The bar for performance will be much higher if there's not any sort of interesting analysis or optimization going into it. It's just, let's just get something working. Okay. CCM buck, and it works and it meets all the specs. Fine. But if you want to go for something a little bit more ambitious, don't make the decision to stray away from that solely because you're worried, well, if I don't get it to work, am I going to get a zero on the final report? No. Okay. If it's justified and you're trying to do something new and you run into issues, you can explain, hey, we worked on it, we've had these issues, we weren't quite able to get it completed, you'll still do fine in the course. Okay. It won't impact your grade significantly. Does that make sense? Any questions on that? And I, threw dual active bridge out there as, for an example. I by no means mean to say everybody go build a dual active bridge, but I just mean stray away from simplistic CCM topologies that are, in general, just don't make your decision based on, well, we've got limited time and I want to make sure I can get it to work, so I'm going to choose the simplest, most basic thing. Make your decision on, okay, this is 581, let's try to get some experience with some interesting things. Okay. But sorry, so I interrupted you. Your question, Rayong, was what? Sure. So you have that $100, so if it's $50 on switches, and you have $50 left for gate drivers and magnetics, it probably fits in there, right? You still have a couple backups. If your decision's coming down entirely to budget, you can come talk to me and we can figure out what's reasonable there. In terms of what? Most groups got things functioning in the end. A couple didn't. Those were largely due to PCB issues. The specs were different. I ended up with a number of CCM bucks, so I made the specs harder to justify using a CCM buck this year. I think I had some similar mentality last time I ran this competition, and that a lot of groups made a decision based on worrying about time frame and getting things working. but most were not limited by time frame, right? There was, off the top of my head, some groups forgot to put any decoupling caps on anything. Their PCB ended up not working very well. Some groups found their magnetics were more lossy than they wanted them to be, and they were only able to run to lower power. But very few were limited by time, in that you have everything together, soldered, you have the modulator there. There's some time spent soldering, some time spent tweaking signals and trying to get things working and debugging a bit. But given that there's no requirement for closed loop or stability, it's just open loop, kind of iterate through those things. Other questions?
In quantity two, we had access to conductors for a magnetic rather than ordering them. Mm-hmm. Is that still available?
Yes. I can post something on the website saying what conductors I have. Okay, it'll be within the range of what we have in stock, but we can use those resources. That's fine. Anything else? Okay. Well, then we will begin the take-home midterm after PCBs are complete. So hopefully that's this Friday. So plan schedule is to have that sent out Friday or Monday and be due next Friday. As soon as we have everything together. People know that. Okay. Anything else? Okay.
Well, we talked about like high watt ratio for the output. So for example, for the flatback, and then it's like we need to design a transformer like high transformation, like 140.
That's up to you. So
if you got something, maybe they will be very hard to get a performance.
Yeah, I mean, so you have diminishing returns there, right? And that the duty cycle and the flyback can also be used. And if you're trying to do all of it, the transformer turns ratio jumping from a 20 to 1 to a 40 to 1, changing your duty cycle from 0.5 to 0.25 is probably not beneficial to the design. But, yeah. So I don't know. This is more of a specific design specific question. So perhaps we talk in office hours about that. I don't know that the flyback is particularly well suited to this application. I saw it considered a lot because we covered it in some detail in class. But there are some issues there. In terms of how to design that transformer that may be important. Right, so there are four on the auxiliary board, there are four isolated via banks that have isolated 15 volts, an LDO on the board to give you an adjustable voltage, PWM and ground, and then a single power supply going to all of the ground isolated components. So if you need more isolated drives, you can either implement them on your board outside of the area that the competition is going to specify. You can have your power stage and gate drivers, and then put some isolated supplies over here. Or we can find another solution, perhaps jumper over to a second isolation board, second modulation board to get some more. Okay. Neil? Okay. Start early on PCBs. It'll take some time. If not, then plan for today, I just want to briefly cover a couple of things that we didn't quite get to last Wednesday to wrap up on our discussion of sinusoidal approximation. And then we'll start moving into resonance twitch, that concept. Okay. So last Wednesday, we went through the different tanks, series resonant, parallel resonant, LLC, LCC. We mentioned briefly this theorem one that says that if a tank is purely reactive, then when we are analyzing the behavior of that tank, the input impedance is a purely monotonic function of RE. So the tank has only inductance and capacitance, only reactive impedance. There's only one resistive component, and it's RE, which loads the output of it. If that's true, then at any given frequency, this input impedance will either increase from open to short or decrease from open to short, but it'll never change concavity. It'll never go up and down. It's always going to be monotonic. With that being the case, means we would, to examine a tank, no longer have to look at curves of varying RE. We can really just look at open circuit and short circuit conditions and know that everything in between is going to be monotonic in between those two curves. Okay. So we looked at these briefly last class, but just repeated here, summary of these different tanks. So for the series resonant converter, all I need to look at is the input impedance when I have short circuit conditions, or my load resistance RE goes to zero. That would be here. This is RE goes to zero. Open circuit conditions as RE goes to infinity, not actually on the fly, so all the way infinitely north here on the y-axis. We just be some curve up here, the complete open. And then I know for very small REs, I'm gonna be somewhere here and they're gonna increase and increase until I get up to open circuit conditions. For the parallel resonant converter, same idea. Now we have a section where my short circuit conditions are smaller impedance than my open circuit conditions. Should be everything over here. And then to the right of this, my open circuit conditions are smaller impedance than my short circuit conditions. Those cross over at FM. This is what we name this single frequency where, regardless of the loading conditions, all input impedance curves cross at a single input impedance. And the existence of this is a consequence of theorem one and the fact that these two cross. Okay. Theorem one states that for the conditions we're looking at, reactive tank, loading resistance, the input impedance at every frequency has to be a purely monotonic function of RE. So if these things ever cross, it means that, okay, they have to cross, every single RE value has to result in the same impedance. If there was any difference there, then infinity and zero crossing each other would mean it kind of came up and came back down. So anytime my open circuit and short circuit input impedance cross, means that this impedance is constant for all values of loading resistance. Okay, what was important about this FM is that it means that these two cross, it divides regions where I have larger current at short circuit conditions and regions where I have smaller current at short circuit conditions. Okay. So over here on the left, in the parallel resonant tank, as I go towards a short circuit, my input impedance is smaller and I'll have higher currents in short circuit conditions than in open circuit conditions. Over here on the right, I have the opposite. Since my VI infinity is smaller impedance than my VI zero, means that as I go from short circuit to open circuit, the currents coming out of the inverter are actually going to increase. It's generally not the behavior we expect of a power converter. expect, particularly for our traditional PWM topologies, if I leave an open circuit on the output, I should have very small current, no power going to it. If I have a short circuit, I expect to have somewhat larger current. Then similar for LLC and LCC. Now, depending on the loading conditions, if I short circuit the output of either of these, I have a shunt element and that gets shorted out, both of them leaving me with series resonance. Both of them, VI0, looks similar, series resonant converter with just L and C. As I go towards open circuit conditions, I have a new series resonance, looking from the input impedance, where I've either had two caps in series or two inductors in series to change the value of my reactive element. Here we again have, in both cases, this FM frequency, which divides. On one side of FM, we get higher currents at short circuit, and on one side, we get higher currents at open circuit. And then here, because of the shifting resonance, we have kind of a moving VVS bound, where in both cases out here on the right, we have VVS for all loads. We're here on the left, we're going to not have ZVS, instead we'll have zero current switching for all loads. And then somewhere in the middle, we have a transition where we can get either depending on the load. So in the LCC case, if I have a short circuit at the output, I'll be purely inductive and I'll get ZVS. If I have an open circuit following ZI infinity, I'll be purely capacitive and I'll get DCS for any frequency in there. And then as the load changes, it's going to transition. Again, because this is built on sinusoidal approximation, these should all say ZVS possible, DCS possible, subject to further analysis. I can't say if I've actually achieved it, only that my loading's inductive, so I might have current in the correct polarity. How much current, whether or not I have the correct dead time, subject to looking into it a little closer. Okay. Questions on any of that? Largely just review of things we've already discussed. Okay. Not the last item I want to talk about in sinusoidal approximation is the existence of these subharmonic modes, which have to do with the range of validity of this sinusoidal approximation. Okay. So we built this on top of the idea that whatever is going on through the tank of this converter, whatever is loading it, I have a high Q resonance that will relatively attenuate the fundamental almost not at all and all of the harmonics significantly. Okay. So as long as whatever that tank does to my inverter waveform, it causes the fundamental to pass and everything else to get attenuated nearly to zero or to very small values, then the sinusoidal approximation is going to be more or less valid. Okay. Even if I do have a high Q tank, but I switch at a frequency significantly away from the resonant frequency, that can degrade this approximation. Okay. So here, again, just looking at the series resonant converter input impedance and transfer function for varying values of RE, okay, where is the sinusoidal approximation going to be valid? So obviously, if I put my fundamental right here, and I'm looking at the series resonant converter as we've drawn it to date, where I have a square wave voltage source inverter applied to the tank, some resistive loading equivalent through a full bridge diode rectifier, then what I'm going to end up with, that square wave is going to have the large fundamentals and then smaller odd harmonics. We did square wave voltage source inverter Fourier series. really previously only derived the amplitude of the fundamental component, which was 4 over pi times vg times whatever amplitude we had of a square wave. So I go out and do all of the harmonics. What I find is the Fourier series coefficients of those harmonics is 4 over n pi, where n is 2k plus 1, k is some positive integer. So only the odd harmonics is this 1, 3, 5, 7 in the spectrum. So if I decide to make S is equal to 1, or my switching frequency equal to my resonant frequency, then I'll have 4 over pi VG right in the middle of this resonance. And then at 3 times F naught, I'd get some 1/3 of that. And then at 5 times, I'd get a 1/5 of it. And at 7 times, I get a 1/7 of it. Things get smaller and smaller. Somewhat still significant as the combined contribution of all of these harmonics and the voltage is the difference between the sinusoid and the square wave. But now as I apply them to the tank, I'm going to see the input impedance 10 to the minus 1. So my current coming from this component is going to get multiplied by 10. Then my current resulting from these harmonics is all going to get divided by 10. So I'm going to have about 100x difference in this bottom curve here between the currents resulting from the fundamental and the third harmonics. I have some amplitude of current at the fundamental, and then about 1 over 300 that amplitude from this harmonic, 1 over 500 or 700, a little bit more. So in that case, my sinusoidal approximation is going to be pretty good. These things are going to contribute less than 1% of my overall waveform amplitude at any given time. Okay. Now that begins to degrade under two conditions. Okay. So my sinusoidal approximation accuracy degrades if, one, Q decreases. Oh, I've drawn this looking at this bottom curve, would be my short circuit conditions. As I go towards an open circuit condition, increasing my equivalent output resistance, I'm going to jump up between these curves eventually to my open circuit condition, which was just a flat curve up here at infinity. That's the case. Well, in that limit, I'll get zero current everywhere, and it's not going to matter. But if I look somewhat below that, at a very large output resistance, I'm going to have more or less equal attenuation. The curve up here look like this. So I go through all these harmonics, they're all going to see the same input impedance, they're all going to get multiplied by the same thing when I look at the input current. Okay. So that'll degrade. Instead of 100x attenuation, I'm just going to have what I had fundamentally for my Fourier series. I'll have 1/3 the amplitude of current at the third, 1/5 at the fifth, 1/7 at the seventh. Still arguable that, okay, the sinusoidal approximation, it's got approximation in the name, it doesn't have to be perfect. Maybe that's okay. The bigger problem is going to be F is changed so that a harmonic has, call it F harmonic over F naught, close to 1. What I mean by this is where this will really fall apart is if I change my switching frequency such that instead of my fundamental being close to this resonant frequency, my third or my fifth is closest to that resonant frequency. So if I, for example, switch that, let's see, about here, such that my third was here, my fifth was somewhere out here. Just shift this whole spectrum that I drew for my inverter voltage over such that the third harmonic falls right at this resonant frequency. Now that third harmonic is going to get multiplied by 10. Everything else is going to get attenuated by 10 or more when I have about 100x increase in my third harmonic and everything else relative to everything else. Okay. That's going to then result in a pretty good sinusoidal waveform going through my tank, but it's going to have three resonant periods per switching interval instead of one. It's now actually going to be okay to make a sinusoidal approximation, but the sinusoidal approximation is around my third harmonic. It's not going to be what I've looked at to date. Actually, everything's dominated by that third. And if I want to approximate it as single frequency, I have to approximate it as triple my switching frequency. Make sense? So the net result of this is that for the series resonant converter, somewhere about here and over, sinusoidal approximation is going to be pretty valid. Back in this region, sinusoidal approximation, as we've done it, looking at just the fundamental, is going to be way off. The reason is that I can no longer approximate only that fundamental matters. Fundamental actually gets attenuated and the harmonics dominate. If I go in the other direction, go out to higher frequency, I don't have this nice high Q resonance, but I still have an inductive impedance, which is going to give more attenuation to the higher frequencies. It'll still be somewhat valid. The next couple of slides just show examples of this. So this is now the sinusoidal approximation as we've derived it for a high Q case in terms of the converter transfer function, which is eventually our voltage conversion ratio. This red is what happens when I model the fundamental. Blue when I model the third harmonic, green when I model the fifth harmonic, and this pink color when I model the seventh harmonic. I'm still doing pure sinusoidal analysis, but I'm just running different harmonics through it. Then if I assume linearity, I can sum those up, and here's my complete through the seventh harmonic voltage gain that I'll see out of this series resonant converter across different frequencies. So near F is equal to 1 and above it, it's really no difference from what we had before. It's just the high Q case, just this blue curve from about here on. I get the same sort of shape. But as I start to reduce down such that my third harmonic falls into that high Q resonance, I'm going to get a peak. A third harmonic's excited, causes voltage gain. Okay. If I go to a lower Q case, for example, one of these curves up here, where I have lower Q, less peaking, and a wider bandwidth of this reasonably high gain through the transfer function, these things begin to run together. Same thing, just looking at low Q or higher effective loading resistance. Now each of these peaks, because lower Q, widens out and eventually run together. Okay. This, just as a side comment here, creates some difficulty in eventually doing closed loop control of these converters. I've got a series resonant converter with the diode rectifier. One way that I can control that is by varying the switching frequency to regulate my conversion ratio. Now, as the load resistance changes, that curve changes. And particularly if I'm operating over in this region, say I'm operating right here, and I decide that for whatever reason there was a load change and my voltage is too high, I need to reduce the voltage. What do I do, right? So if I have some linear controller, it would say, okay, decrease the switching frequency, the voltage should reduce, but in fact, it's going to increase whether I go left or right. The only way to get my voltage down is to somehow get out here. This creates a nonlinear control issue where if I just have a PID type controller or some other linear controller, it's going to vary switching frequency and assume that everything is monotonic. If I decrease it, the voltage should go down. If I increase it, the voltage should go up. Well, here you have a non-monotonic transfer characteristic. In some regions, decreasing the switching frequency will reduce the voltage. In some regions, it will increase it. Needs a more complex linear controller to accommodate for that, or need to stay within regions of this curve where the thing is monotonic. So you can use a linear controller. So if we combine all that together, you have a plot that looks like this from the book that shows characteristics of this series resonant converter with a full bridge diode rectifier across different values of Q and different values of F. You see, as you go down towards F is equal to 1/3, third harmonic dominates at 0.2, the fifth harmonic dominates, and this would continue on and on. This plot actually has some additional complexity to it. This is again taken from the book, in that there are different operating modes. CCM and DCM refers to the full bridge diode rectifier, whether or not those diodes shut off and have some zero conduction period. And then this K is referring to how many resonant periods am I getting per one switching period. K is equal to zero means I get less than a full resonant period of the tank in one switching period. K is equal to 1 means I get about a full period of resonance of the tank. And as it goes higher and higher, over here at the third harmonic, I've got K is equal to 3. It means I'm going to get 3 full periods of the tank resonating in one switching period of my inverter. Okay. This ends up is all solved out, CCM and DCM, using state plane analysis, where for each of these, you do a separate, each of these regions, you need to change the equations defining the converter and redo that analysis. We're not going to go over all of these. A lot of very similar but slightly different state planes getting different solutions. More so, I bring it up just to make you aware of this behavior. Questions on that? What's the limitation of this sinusoidal approximation? Okay, so last topic I want to cover here before we kind of move on beyond these AC link converters, the idea of ZVS assistance. ZVS assistance comes up because now that we've looked at these different tanks, different behaviors of converter, we found that there's some regions where you may be able to achieve ZVS, some regions where we know you can't achieve it. Well, in those regions where you have capacitive loading, or even if you've gone and analyzed it using state plane analysis and found that you're operating below the ZVS boundary, all is not lost. It means that the converter cannot natively achieve ZVS, but if we're still in the design stage, we can alter it in order to make it achieve ZVS. Okay? So by now you've seen a number of different topologies. Say, well, this one can't achieve ZVS, maybe I try a different converter. If there's a reason that makes you want to stick to a converter topology in an operating mode where you are not achieving ZVS, you can add auxiliary circuits to supplement the ZVS behaviors. Okay. So the idea behind that is that we have a difference between what the power electronics require and what the converter itself is actually providing. And we can supplement that with, for example, shunt paths on this. Let's say this is some half bridge part of whatever topology I've chosen. I've got a current coming out of that half bridge that I'll call IHB. That then goes into my tank. And based on the characteristics of the tank, I can say there's some current that's going to be drawn. Solve the sinusoidal approximation using the input impedance, saying everything happens at the fundamental, or I can go and do state plane analysis of this whole thing and get a more exact solution. Okay. If I just have this, then my half bridge current is my tank current. The half bridge current has to satisfy certain conditions in order to achieve EVS. Right? Before I turn on the devices, it needs to be in a polarity where it can charge and discharge these capacitances. Okay. So, what might that look like? Let's say I have a condition where I'm not achieving ZVS. Switch this VA. That's going to look like this. And I have a tank current that is capacitive in nature. It looks like this. Okay, this would be my sinusoidal approximation. If I see that the tank impedance is capacitive, I know that my current is going to be leading voltage. That means that as long as I don't have the conditions I just talked about, as long as the fundamental sinusoidal approximation is okay, it means that during the time the VA switches from high to low, I'm going to have some negative current in the tank. It means the current in the tank, as I've drawn it, is actually flowing back into this phase leg. As I'm switching from high to low, means I'm turning off this device and I want to turn on this one. The current is flowing back into the phase leg. That current is going to forward bias the high side body diode and keep it on the whole time. When I turn on this one, I'm going to hard switch, have all the energy loss associated with that. Right? What I need is a different color, some positive current on this transition, negative current on this transition. This is what I need at the half bridge current to get ZVS. I want this current to be the opposite polarity in some magnitude so that I can get ZVS reasonably quick without certainly long dead times. In this case, my tank doesn't give that to me, so the converter will not natively achieve ZVS. But I can, in any case, supplement through some additional current. We'll call IZVS. So polarity and magnitude requirements in order to achieve ZVS are on the current coming out of the half bridge. Tank current isn't giving it to me. I'll add in some additional current in order to satisfy these constraints, half bridge. Okay. Ideally, what I'd like is a ZVS current that does something like this. Not quite like that. I need to go a little bit higher. So that when I add up I tank and IZVS, I have enough current net going into the half bridge to give me zero voltage switching. If I drew that absolutely perfectly, then my half bridge current track I tank, and then do something like this to get ZVS back, something like this. Okay. That's kind of my ideal case. If I could just put in some zero cost, zero size, zero loss, controllable source, I want to do something like that. Just give me a pulse right at the switching time to give me enough current to soft switch. Same thing at the other edge. And I want that is because if this is just some shunt path here that's not going through the tank to the load, it's not contributing any real power. So any extra current I put here is going to cause more conduction losses without contributing any power. It's going to hurt my efficiency. This, in most cases, is really hard to do. Generate something that gives you a quick controllable spike amplitude. Some number of switches and some control associated with it, some extra passive elements. So more often than not, we'll do something like this is the amplitude that I need. Just use an inductor that'll give me a triangle wave of current. Or perhaps an LC to make this a little more sinusoidal. But in some way generate this additional current necessary for ZVS. Some examples of how I might do that. Okay. If I'm looking at just a half bridge, top left, this is my I tank. Do things like just putting a resonant network to ground or a resonant network really off to any DC node. And then I can design this either to be resonant and inject some sinusoidal current. So I've designed the resonant frequency a little bit below the switching frequency so that this looks inductive and contributes some equivalent inductive impedance in parallel with whatever I see going out to the rest of the converter. Or I could just make these capacitors really big so that at the switching frequency this just looks like an inductor and I'll get a triangle wave of current through this path. When I have a full bridge, some phase shift between these two legs that's used to generate power, generate a voltage applied off to the tank. Then I can have the same idea, put LC between these two. And again, either make this resonant with F naught a little below the switching frequency, or I can put F naught way below the switching frequency, have this capacitor just be a DC block and a triangle wave current flowing through here. Either of these cases, I'm contributing really just some parallel inductive impedance, such that hopefully I can make the loading impedance in parallel with this inductive impedance look net inductive, give me ZVS. Okay. The other options are active solutions. So in here, let's say this is my power stage, just a half bridge, contribute some current I tank. This is now auxiliary. So these are two additional sets and additional half bridge that I add that wasn't part of the original converter. Okay. I can kind of through this same principle now have an inductor and or a capacitor. Well, inductor and a capacitor or just an inductor. and control the phase shift between these two to control how much current I develop in that inductor. Okay. This, in many cases, can be quite costly. I'm saying for every half bridge in my power stage, I'm going to add another half bridge just to help it get ZVS. In particular, in high power applications, this can be a net benefit because this auxiliary leg doesn't have the actual power stage current going through it. Okay. If I've got a 100 amp converter and I need to get an extra 10 amps just to the ZVS transition to make sure it obtains soft switching, and I can design maybe a 10 amp phase leg here to help my 100 amp phase leg that was going to have high switching losses achieve ZVS, can be significantly lower cost than this auxiliary phase leg. This, I think, just showing a voltage here. I can also do this if I can make sure it doesn't saturate in a full bridge. I can put just an inductor L, which is quite comparable to the difference between an LLC converter and a series resonant converter. This effectively a shunt inductance in the tank. Yeah. So it depends and needs to be verified, but you should, because you're designing this to be net inductive at the switching frequency, and one's the input, one's the output, but both of them are seeing this effective impedance. So this thing should be very simple ZVS. The constraint there is on how you control it. So if you're willing to do something like this orange curve, okay, then both should obtain ZVS pretty easily. If you want to try to approach something like this blue where you just have a quick spike, you have to put some more active controls in this, but that may lead to this auxiliary phase leg having some hard switching transition. Reason why is you'd have zero current, then this thing would switch to begin ramping up the current. And at that first action, you have zero current, so it's going to have to hard switch. It ramps up, allows this thing to switch. This will ramp it back down and then shut off again at zero current. You may actually be intentionally making this thing hard switch so that you can limit the amount of current in here. Depends on a trade-off between conduction and switching losses. But in general, that's a lot more tolerable. Like I said, this is, in my example, 100 amp phase leg has huge switching losses at hard switch. This is 5-10 amp phase leg, really rated only for the circulating current. I can hard switch those with much lower loss. Should be smaller devices, larger on resistance, but much smaller capacitance, smaller switching loss. Any other questions? Okay. So my next topic I want to talk about, really just looking back, what are the switching loss mechanisms that we've addressed and which ones haven't we addressed? And then how do those relate to different, you know, what would we want ideally, and how can we achieve different aspects of what we want to achieve there? That's going to lead to a little bit of discussion of this Class E amplifier that we saw briefly in our seminar on Friday. But I'll talk a little bit more about this and some different RF amplifier derived topologies we can use. And then we're going to get into concept of a resonant switch in a PWM converter. But I'm out of time, so we will pick up with that on Wednesday.